Chapter 5. The Struggle for the South Pole. In addition to all the other phenomena marking the great turning point of this era, the many expeditions being sent out to the polar regions by various world powers are attracting particular attention in esoteric circles. Nothing indicates more expressly the end of a cycle in the life of mankind than this feverish interest in the polar regions, and especially the South Pole. The fact that the power-hungry and grasping forces of this world are stretching out their unholy hands towards these areas of the Earth is, to all esotericists, practically the last link in the ominous chain of doom for the world and mankind. Until recently, both polar regions represented unapproachable and inviolable mysteries to the vast majority of people. Not much more was known about them than that they were frigid wastes of snow and ice of indescribable inaccessibility, with long, pitch-dark polar nights. People knew of vaguely indicated continents of penguins and had heard accounts of the mysterious northern and southern lights without being able to understand the essentially holy, though ominous meaning of this radiant language which, of late, occasionally inscribes its fiery characters above our countries as well. However, now there are perfectly equipped scientific expeditions which have begun to obtain strategic bases for their governments, as well as the three raw materials essential to the power of destruction, namely uranium, plutonium, and a still unknown mineral which we shall call neptunium. The power of destruction is a trinity of forces: the force of explosion, uranium, the force of crystallization, plutonium, and the force of poisoning, neptunium. These are the three titans of the ancients, mentioned in myths and legends, the three titans who in prehistoric times were held captive in the abyss by the fathers. This abyss will be opened by three world powers sharply to be distinguished: Russia, representing the world proletariat; South America, representing the Church and the Nazis, who chose Argentina as their haven directly after the outbreak of the Second World War; and thirdly, the United States of America, representing the various aspects of capitalism. We might also call these three powers by their now outmoded names: the social, clerical, and liberal powers. Or we might refer to them in terms of esoteric science as the urge for freedom in the dialectical sense, the urge for power in the nature-religious sense, and the urge for power in the materialistic sense. It appears that each of these three world powers will release its titan and, by so doing, sink into the abyss. The genie in the bottle will be set free, and with a resounding laugh, will hurl itself at its liberators, but only after humanity has savored to the last drop the consequences of the threefold power of destruction. This draws our thoughts to the Book of Revelations, where we read of the three woes which will afflict mankind at the fifth and the sixth blasts of the trumpet, after the abyss has been opened. What, then, is meant by the abyss? It is Patala, the south pole of our globe. This may seem strange, but only because of current ignorance on this point, and because of the fact that the holy language has been translated by people who do not in the least understand the universal doctrine. However strange it may seem, the word Patala, or South Pole, has been translated as abyss, although in fact this word is only a derivative of the word Patala. It would also be possible, for instance, to translate it as netherworld. Both poles, as we learn from esoteric science, are storehouses, receivers, and dischargers of all cosmic and earthly vital forces which our planet requires and assimilates in its complicated life processes. They form two natural safety valves in the great dynamic processes of this Earth, two enormous radiation fields of which the northern and southern lights bear witness. These light radiations appear in the focal points of magnetic fields, and their color, light and sound, which can be clearly perceived by the inhabitants of the Arctic territories, prove that they are etheric radiations which are absorbed by the atmosphere and thereby reach every living soul. From earliest times, these fiery, luminous polar radiations have been referred to as serpents or dragons, and the biblical expressions "the spirit of the abyss" and "the beast of the bottomless pit" are very clear references to the forces of the South Pole. When the beast rises from the abyss, the powers of the South Pole are set free. The fact that the three aforementioned world powers are really engaged in releasing these forces is simply the historic and nature scientific confirmation of an event which must irrevocably come to pass. For the pupils of the spiritual school, the only question has been, how will it come about, and through whom? How will the beast of the abyss be set free? By whom will the three titans be liberated? Surely no one who knows the risks involved and is filled with love for his fellow man will unleash a danger such as this. No normal human being will ignite a fuse when he is sure that an explosion must follow. He would only do such a thing in ignorance, or because of the enormous struggle for survival, in which he is seeking the greatest advantages for himself and his children, for his country, his people, or his race. In their drive for self-maintenance, the three world powers, so knowledgeable, so extremely capable, and yet so woefully unwise where the naked truth is concerned, are racing to the South Pole, to Patala, the abyss, the underworld, to put the spark to the tinder and set it ablaze. This great historic moment of our era will come about in the years that lie ahead. Thus we see how man passes sentence on himself and affects his own downfall, whether he is socialist, cleric, or liberal. All three powers will release their titans, and amid their bellowing laughter, mankind will prepare for itself a future fraught with explosion, crystallization, and poisoning. It is well known to the initiated that all beneficial cosmic and etheric influences enter via the North Pole, from Meru, the abode of the gods, whereas all deadly influences emanate from the South Pole, Patala, the underworld. It was already known in prehistoric times that from the South Pole, the breath of the fiercest and hottest passions rises. A breath that becomes atmospheric in the form of the southern lights, and as such ultimately becomes the human breath, that is, if one is susceptible to it and attracts it magnetically. The dragon saliva of the spirit from the abyss is threefold in its effect: explosive, crystallizing, and poisoning. This saliva is flung out into the atmosphere like a plague, and innumerable people are suffering from this unspeakable world pestilence. Ever greater numbers are showing symptoms of a blind, destructive urge, accompanied by a subtle malignity. This is the infernal raging of uranic patalism, which erodes all morality. Every promise, agreement, or positive alliance, every sacramental tie, every effort to preserve harmony, every friendship, is violated so boldly, with such self-assurance, with an invocation of the holiest names and even with tears, that one is reminded with astonishment of the courtroom, where Caiaphas, filled with the most holy indignation, rent his garments and, pointing at Jesus, said, "He slanders God." This terrible venom, slithering around man like a snake and setting its fiendish teeth into him like a flash of lightning, is Neptunian patalism, which subverts all right-mindedness. There is an ever-increasing multitude of people who can no longer be jolted into wakefulness, the living dead, so to speak, who have succumbed to an ever greater spiritual crystallization. Totally sunk in their earthly servitude, they have literally lost the ability to see and hear. These are the victims of Plutonian patalism. If the three aspects of the beast from the abyss can work such mischief simply by their atmospheric activity, it is obvious what will happen when the spiritual and elemental status quo of the mysterious continent of Antarctica is violated. The mere fact that three world powers are disputing possession of this territory speaks very clearly. It is perhaps even clearer that through the striving of these powers, the storehouses of cosmic and earthly vital forces, the very dwelling places of the cosmic elements, are being violated and robbed. As a result, the necessary vital processes of the Earth are being disrupted. When esoteric researchers state that, in contrast to the North Pole, the South Pole possesses a radiation field of deadly forces, this should be rightly understood. The northern polar field receives the interplanetary and cosmic forces necessary to the Earth and its inhabitants, as well as to the harmonious activity of the Earth forces themselves, which are mainly concentrated at the South Pole. That is why we speak of the South Pole as Patala, the underworld, and the North Pole as Meru, the head, the upper world. The southern radiation field contains numerous waste gases, forces, and ethers which have to be extracted from the atmosphere by expulsion into space and by the activity of the sun. However, because of spiritual and moral deficiency, this atmospheric cleansing process cannot take place, and so the forces of Patala are not expelled but attracted, as a result of which the spirit from the abyss is released. Since man's behavior as socialist, cleric, or capitalist fosters this disturbed balance, the fate of the world and mankind should be quite clear. This cosmological explanation is, of course, very rudimentary. It might be supplemented, for example, with a study of the North Pole, which has been known from the very beginning of this world as the source of all life, into which a steady stream of electromagnetic light, forces, constantly flows. These forces, after transmutation, are placed in the service of all forms of life. Many lovely myths tell us that the North Pole, the northern radiation field, is a gateway to the immovable kingdom. That, spiritually seen, there is a sea around the North Pole that never freezes and a land that is always green. This land, known as the Skull of the Earth, is one that never vanishes. Even though, in the course of history, whole continents have disappeared, new continents have risen, and the aspect of the Earth is changing continuously, the Skull of the World, this immovable kingdom, this golden gate, has remained unchanged up to this very day. It is important to draw mankind's attention to the spirit of the abyss, which has been invoked and is being set free in the present revolutionary turmoil. It is necessary to realize that the leading authorities in this dialectical world are the ones who are pronouncing sentence and who are in the process of bringing about the self-destruction of our era. The question is whether man will allow himself to be dragged along in this process, or whether he will want to liberate himself. It has happened many times. During the Hyperborean era, the Lemurian era, the Atlantean era, and also 32 times during the present Aryan era, that a kind of separation has taken place between the righteous and the unrighteous, between those who worship the spirit of earthly nature and those seeking the gateway to the immovable kingdom in order to enter through it into the original freedom of the children of God. Today, once again, mankind stands before such a separation. Will it allow itself to be dragged along in the circular course of dialectical nature by the titans of Patala? Or will it follow the path of liberation by applying and actualizing the holy science of rebirth? This path can be seen and followed when one has become ennobled to it by the purification of the soul. Then one will know that, in accordance with the words of Revelations 11, there are two witnesses who will stand in this world like two shining candlesticks, to separate all who bear the sign of the Son of Man on their foreheads from those bearing the sign of the Beast of Patala. After that, they will gather together the chosen ones and lead them through the golden portal of the northern radiation field into the new field of life. The two witnesses symbolize the male and female aspects of the spiritual school, preparing the path for the chosen people in true cooperation. To these two witnesses falls the task of establishing the temple of God and the one altar in the realm of time as purified foci, so that the people of the Lord may enter. And when they have finished their testimony and have done their work, the spirit of Patala, the beast that ascends from the bottomless pit, will make war upon them and conquer them and kill them, and their dead bodies will lie in the streets of the great city where our Lord was also crucified, and the people will gaze at their dead bodies, and after 3.5 days the spirit of life from God will enter them, and they will stand up on their feet. The two cooperating streams of the spiritual school will prepare the new paths. They will make their sacrifice for the chosen ones. In the end, it will be demonstrated that they are immune to the power of matter and invulnerable to the violence of the three titans. And a great voice from heaven will say, "Come up hither." And they will go to the eternally green land of the Skull of the World, and they will pass through the golden portals of the northern radiation field. He who has ears to hear, let him hear.